The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. This is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, the DraftKings Network. It's a numbers game live from Bar Canada at the D downtown Vegas. Gil Alexander, along with producer number nine, so much more than a producer, Kelly Bidlon. What's happening? You good?
What's up, man? Show starts in like 30, right?
Yeah. We're not on air yet.
Plenty of time.
Yeah, you're good. Your dad still in town? Your dad out of town?
Nah, he's gone. He gone.
Don't sound like so excited about it. Jeez.
He gone.
Jeez. On the show today, Paul Carr, Champions League plays, Pete Futak on college football, Drew Dinsick will join us to talk both NBA and the NFL, and a little later on, Arnold Schwarzenegger will feed some more donkeys on the show. So I'm looking forward to that as well. That's a good booking on your part.
That was
well done.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
A couple things I want to get to here at the top of the show. One, obviously, the football game last night, which I don't know that there's a lot to say about this. Chargers beat the Jets, and they do so handily on the scoreboard, 27-6. But honestly, the Chargers didn't do much. They just let the Jets make mistakes and won this football game going away. Chargers got their first touchdown on an 87-yard punt return from Darius Davis to go up 7-0. Then the first of the Jets' three turnovers in this game, which was a fumble by Garrett Wilson. That didn't lead to anything from the Chargers. They went three and out, but it was the second one where Zach Wilson was sacked by Joey Bosa. He fumbled. That was recovered by Bosa. That led to a short field Chargers drive that put him up 14-0. And then the third turnover late in the game when it was 20-6 Chargers at that point. That was, again, Zach Wilson getting hit by Khalil Mack, this time on the arm. He fumbled it. Alohi Gilman went 48 yards. Then Eckler in from 27-6. Bottom line, Chargers only had 191 total yards in this game. Herbert was a ho-hum 16 of 30 for 136. He didn't throw any touchdown passes. He got sacked five times. But it was trumped by those three turnovers, and Zach Wilson getting sacked eight times and losing those two fumbles. And so I guess, you know, I'll tell you what Joe Pita texted me during this game. So during this game, now both teams are 4-4 now after the Chargers win that and the Jets lose. But during the game when the Jets were 4-3 and the Chargers still 3-4, Joe Pita texted me. He goes, what's the bigger story, do you think? That the Jets somehow with this outfit have managed to get to 4-3 or that the Chargers with all that talent are still just 3-4? It's a very valid question. And I think we got two... I don't know if we got two on-brand performances, because I don't know what the Chargers brand necessarily is from week to week, but it was certainly the Jets brand, which is your defense is really good, really, really good, among the best in the NFL. But you just stink at quarterback. That's not breaking news. You just do. And as long as the turnovers happen and the subpar quarterback play. By the way, their offensive line is horrific as well. That should be pointed out to give Zach Wilson some cover there. Because everybody assumes, oh, if this was Aaron Rodgers, this team would be in the playoffs going away. Yeah, I'm not so sure. And by the way, the whole Aaron Rodgers coming back this season with the Achilles, let's just stop with that. I don't know what the answer to that question is. I would have answered it. I think the Jets being 4-3 is slightly more surprising. Slightly more because it's harder to overperform than it is to underperform.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely the answer.
Mine was more existential than that yesterday. Mine was more, I just find it amazing how narrative, with narrative. So the Chargers, like I just said, they didn't do anything offensively, but they were great defensively against a terrible Jets defense. Brandon Staley's not going to get any credit, right? Because he never gets credit for any win, so he's not going to get credit for that. But if that was a Bill Belichick coach team last night, he would get all the credit.
Let's go. Yep.
He
yep,
would.
Yep.
Period. He'd get all the credit. And I just think we do that in the NFL so much. Like, this whole thing, and then my brain went to, think about what we've seen in the NFL with Josh Dobbs, by the way. I don't know why you would call him anything else. Josh Dobbs, he's just showing up right off the street, having this great game again, which he's done now more than once in his NFL career, just in the last half year, or half, you know, season of NFL play. And, you know, Will Levis stepping in, first start with the Titans. There's numerous examples of this, where a quarterback just shows up and plays great. And yet, like, we give passes. First of all, the Jets we give a pass to because they are just like, we're going to – essentially what they've done is killed their season by continuing with Zach Wilson. They didn't get Josh Dobbs. But my brain goes to, we don't kill other coaches like we should, like a Sean McVay. To me, and you could say all you want about my Michigas with the whole Puka Nacua thing. You can buy that or not about how they just, when Cooper Kupp came back in, they tried to force the ball to him at their own detriment. But Sean McVay, while all these other quarterbacks are just coming up and playing well, he couldn't get Brett Rypien ready to play in that football game last week. Like, they were that bad and were giving Sean McVay a pass. He continues to run on first down like crazy. We give him a pass. I'm just saying there's a lot of hypocrisy when it comes from coach to coach.
God, I think that just going back to the narrative thing from last, I texted you this yesterday afternoon because you watch some of the shows, you know, some of the shows on other four-letter networks over the past couple of weeks, and it's like, oh, the Jets have turned a corner, and watch out, Zach. Well, Zach Wilson's under control, and I think I've been more of a Zach Wilson apologist than anybody because I liked him in college. I thought he might be interesting in the NFL, and it just didn't work out. And, you know, we were talking, it was like, everybody, it's just amazing how a couple wins can cover up, you know, your biggest problems, and their biggest problem, like you're talking about, is the quarterback position in the offensive line. And then it's everybody after the game yesterday is just dunking on Zach Wilson again. Like, oh, he's always been the problem. I've always said it.
It's
like,
incredible.
No, like 4 hours ago, you guys were all cool with
which
it.
Which segues us into the power ratings, which we're going to do a little later on, where, again, I have a tier of teams between 10 and 13. One of them happens to bleed in the top 10, right? 10 to 13, which to me is the Lions, Chargers, Browns, Seahawks group, if you will, roughly, right? And so here we have this game this week where the Chargers are going to host on a short week. They're going to host the Lions, who have extra rest. Lions are a slight favorite. And the Jets, short rest, going to take on the Raiders, short rest by one day to the Raiders, are going to take on the Raiders. And they're a road favorite in that game. Antonio Pierce, by the way, leaves the building way earlier than me now. Ever since he became head coach, I haven't seen him once. Ballets are saying the same thing.
Great update.
It's got to be the first guy at the Raiders Park, if you will.
There's been no line movement on that Lions-Chargers game.
Nothing at all. But yeah. I think it's such a great barometer for, okay, Chargers, and okay, Lions. Let's see how you do against this level of competition, which is basically staring roughly a team as talented as you are across the field from each other. So that should be fascinating. The other thing that I just wanted to bring up here in the first segment, because we had Drew Dinsen coming up to talk NBA and NFL. This is just your friendly awards season PSA, because we spend a lot of time talking about awards bets. Kelly, I know other shows spend even way more time than we do on it. I'll raise my hand. We spend a good amount of time on it in every sport. And I always say we got to worry with awards that oftentimes we are far too close to the sun. Far too close. And I always bring up that story about my buddy in San Francisco who's not a bettor the year that Bryce Harper beat Juan Soto for NL MVP. And he, you know, very casually said to me, he goes, oh, Gil, Brandon Crawford's going to be the MVP, right? Brandon Crawford of his hometown Giants. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. Brandon Crawford was 100-1 in the betting markets. Now, he finished third, didn't win it. But the fact that he finished third shows you that we are just way too close to the sun on these things. So that segues into National League Cy Young. Yesterday, all finalists for all Major League Baseball awards were announced. And the three National League Cy Young finalists were Blake Snell, the prohibitive favorite in the betting market, Zach Gallen of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who was a Cy Young candidate for most of the season, although in our sort of parlance, betting parlance, it petered off at the end, if you will. And then Logan Webb of the San Francisco Giants. No Justin Steele of the Chicago Cubs. No Spencer Strider of the Atlanta Braves. So, again, all the inordinate amount of time we spent not only talking about it, but actually making bets. Strider, who we said, even those of us who had bets on Strider, once your ERA balloons to close to four, and he ended up with a 3.86 ERA, you're not winning it. So whether you're a finalist or not becomes immaterial. But no Strider. He's not even in the top three with that 3.86 ERA, despite having a 36.8% K rate. And in the end, Justin Steele, who ended up 16-5 with a 4.9 WAR, but did have three really poor starts at the end of the year, which kind of went unnoticed because we were so involved in the playoff race at that point, and the Cubs were swooning. Well, he was swooning along with them. But there was a period down the stretch where Steele, remember there was a moment where we're like, it might not be Strider, it might not be Snell, it could be Steele. He's not even in the top three.
It was a couple weeks.
So it ends up being Snell, who everybody figures will win this, but again, I'm just saying, we don't know anything, but I figure it'll be Snell. Zach Gallen, who, yes, body of work, he ended up 17-9 with a 5.2 WAR, but don't use WAR as a barometer because Strider had a 5.5 WAR, right? Don't use that. But Gallen's ERA was 3.47. His advanced stats were kind of in line with that. And then Logan Webb of the San Francisco Giants. I watched a lot of Giants games down the stretch of the season, and if you heard their broadcasters, they were convinced he'd be a finalist because he ended up with an 11-13 win-loss record, which you're like, well, how did he get in with an 11-13 win-loss record? Well, he had the worst run support in all of baseball. But he had 24 quality starts out of 33 starts. He led the majors in innings pitched, 216. He led the majors in walk rate with just a 3.6% walk rate. And he led the majors with a 62.7% ground ball rate. So all of those things apparently factored in, and the voters at least decided that's worthy of a top three. So no Snell, no Steele. And if you're wondering, that's great. When are these awards taking place anyway? That's a great question. Today is the coveted Executive of the Year award.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Tomorrow is all MLB team nominees. By the way, the MLB team stuff doesn't get announced till mid-December. But as far as this week's Silver Slugger on Thursday, Golden Gloves on Fridays, for our bets, not till next week. Monday's a Rookie of the Year. By the way, Josh Young didn't make the Rookie of the Year finalist. I know he had fewer than 500 at-bats because he got hurt. But those are the only real surprises. The NL Cy Young was the biggest news breaker for those of us betting in this stuff. Rookies of the Year on Monday. Manager of the Year. Oh, I know you bet on that, which didn't exist on Tuesday. Cy Young's on Wednesday next week. And then MVP's not till Thursday of next week. So there you go.
Try to contain your excitement.
No steal, no Strider.
I thought I sent in the wrong stuff. I peeled back the curtain. I thought I typed this up, sent in the graphic for Ryan to build up, and then I went in there. I'm like, wait a second. I didn't see Strider steal. I must have wrong information. Nope.
Remember, bettors, sometimes we're just in this ridiculous cocoon. Coming back with Drew Dinsick next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Games every week. Sign up today. Get access to our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up now and get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120. Don't miss this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up now. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, here on A Numbers Game, Bar Canada at the D. We get tweets at Beating the Book. We have a couple Achilles tweets. Let me read this one first. This is from Tom Mast 313. You had an Achilles injury. Oh, I had two, Tom Mast 313. What's Aaron Rodgers' best case scenario to run and move around Christmas time? Well, again, I'm no Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has the best medical care there is day after day after day. But from my experience, having had it in two different generations of how this goes and how medicine has advanced with this, a lot of what you're seeing with him is performative. When you have Achilles surgery, you can be seen standing and throwing a football. But to be there in live action on an NFL level is a whole different story, which brings me to Tony Farmer's tweet, which I'll continue the answer after this. He says, let's just stop with that on Rodgers coming back this season because you're sick of hearing about it or because you don't think it's going to happen or both. I think he's back this season. I've personally seen alternative medicine do things Western doctors, and then he ... I would assume he says cannot. Again, this isn't about Eastern medicine and Western medicine. It's about a surgery and your ability to heal from this kind of thing. And there's different kinds of surgeries, right? One of mine was done in a certain way where it was tied. Another one of mine was done where it was sort of meshed together. I don't know how Aaron Rodgers was done. But the point is that any doctor who would put him in harm's way, first of all, the answer to your question is, I don't think they're making the playoffs, right? So I think that's the first thing. First thing is, I don't think they're going to be in contention for Aaron Rodgers to even come back. Secondly, even if they were, I don't think any doctor worth his or her salt who is advanced in this kind of medicine ought to in any way responsibly put him in harm's way for this. Because if something else happens to him where it's not fully healed in the process, because way back when, the reason they told you not to do anything for 6 months, this is old school medicine, was because there was a rate of re-rupture. the rate of re-rupture hasn't disappeared. They just have different philosophies. So they got to be careful with that. That's just my opinion on it. I'm no doctor. I'm just someone who's had two Achilles snaps. So it's not about being sick of hearing about it. It's just about I don't think the Jets are getting there. And even if they do, how irresponsible that would be for the New York Jets. And all this stuff where you see him standing, anybody could have done that. That's so different from playing actual professional football. Before we get to Drew, I want to bring up one other thing. The reason that that baseball award segment that we just talked about, right, and how Strider and Steele aren't on there, and I use the phrase, we're too close to the sun on this. The reason that it also got triggered from yesterday, and we do guessing lines yesterday, so I can't get to everything else, but Bill Barnwell did a half-season awards column at ESPN.com.
Oh, I was going to maybe have us do that this week.
Oh, well. So I'm jumping the gun. Once again, I have screwed Kelly out of a segment.
But what did Bill Barnwell have to say? I'm assuming our answers are going to be different from his.
Well, so I just, again, juxtaposed against the Strider Steele thing that they're not even in the top three. When you look at his half-season awards, right, they're most of the things you would expect, right? His offensive, he did 3-2-1 all these, right? His offensive rookie of the year, Stroud 1, Nacua 2, Bijan 3, right? Coach of the year, defensive rookie of the year, Byron Young 3, Jalen Carter 2, Devin Witherspoon 1. Defensive player of the year, TJ Watt 3, Max Crosby 2, Miles Garrett 1. Crosby might be a little different for some in there. Offensive player of the year, McCaffrey 3, AJ Brown 2, Tyreek 1, MVP Mahomes 3, Hurts 2, Lamar 1. Nothing too ridiculous in any of that. Coach of the year. Again, juxtaposed against our baseball conversation. Sirianni 3. Dan Campbell 2. Mike Tomlin 1. So I just want to, again, I don't know that Bill Barnwell represents voters. Maybe he's just on an island. But I'm just saying what we think we're convinced of in awards markets, we might be so far off with what actual humans are thinking. His whole thing, by the way, if you read his capsule on it, was he gets that they're an anomalous 5-3, that they've been outgained in every game, that they're just, you know, by the way, they almost have the most negative yards in all of football when you do it net. Only the Broncos have it worse after last week. But his point was somehow they've gotten to this.
Right, it's the magic beans, and somehow Mike Tomlin has the
right.
magic beans.
But instead of viewing it as this is not sustainable, he's viewed it as magic beans. And he also points out it's kind of like he doesn't want to give a Lifetime Achievement Award, but he kind of in the same sentence does give a Lifetime Achievement Award. Because do you know Tomlin, not only has he never won Coach of the Year, he's never been in the top five for Coach of the Year, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is.
Steelers 5-3, killing all of Kelly's under tickets. Sorry about that.
Yes, they are.
Drew Dinsick joins us, ladies and gentlemen. Whale_Capper for both the Deep Dive podcast, Dinsick Classic, which he does with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge. How you doing, Drew?
I'm good. I assumed Kelly's groan when you said he had Tomlin won for Coach of the Year was like, I feel like, don't get my hopes up here, man. I want to be done with these guys. Like, I know it's pretty dang likely the Steelers are going to lose some miserable games down the stretch here, and that's going to go up in flames. I don't want my hopes up here because, you know, we all scooped Tomlin Coach of the Year preseason thinking that, a team expected to finish fourth with some talent and any kind of step forward on offense could somehow, some way, capture the imagination of the Coach of the Year voters. But the offense has taken a step backwards from last year so far. So yeah. Still need to see some improvement. But at the same time, like, if the Steelers have gotten some of their bad games out of the way and they play some of their good games down the stretch, then, you know, it's not inconceivable that they get a playoff spot and he gets some support in the voting market. But I love the Coach of the Year discussion because I think it's a two-coach race right now, even though there's, like, you can make cases for probably you can make a credible case for, I think, six guys. But right now I would put two at the top, and I think it's an interesting conversation because the two share a division, and whoever wins that division, I think probably wins the award. And it's Dan Campbell and Kevin O'Connell.
Yes.
Kevin O'Connell is interesting at 25-1 because he could, like, there's a legitimate case he could steal this, right? Like, if he wins the NFC North, then Dan Campbell has a 0% chance of winning this award, right? Like, Campbell's, Campbell's candidacy depends right. almost entirely on winning the North, right?
That's a great
if he
point.
Fumbles the bag there, then it's over. And what's funny is if you look at the Vikings schedule, it's not especially impressive. There's, you know, they have to play the Bengals, but that's like the only like kind of likely loss until you get to the later stages of the season. And they finish with a home game on Christmas Eve against the Lions. They get the home game against the Packers the next week, and then they finish at the Lions the final week. So two of their final three games happen to be against Man Campbell himself, and wins in those games would potentially flip the division and give him the inside track to that award. And I think, you know, just as an objective, who deserves it right now? I mean, Dan Campbell's doing what we thought he could do with a good team. Kevin O'Connell is exceeding expectations in ways that I did not think was possible this year. So, you know, I think he, you know, I'm not trying not to be reactionary to what was the most impressive single game of coaching we've seen by any coach in as long as I can remember, where he is literally in 15 seconds describing to Josh Dobbs, you know, what he will see in a upcoming play and succeeding against a decent defense on the road with, you know, that much quarterback adversity was unbelievable from the Vikings on Sunday. But, you know, you take it in a larger context, the fact that the entire Vikings team after, you know, being kind of a fraudulent 13-win team last year, the fact that they're better this year and that they lose Justin Jefferson and Kirk Cousins and even Christian Darrisaw last game, like those are your three most important players on this team. And yet the defense is outperforming expectations. The team overall is just does not look like they would not be playoff frauds if they make it, as far as I can tell you, especially if Justin Jefferson and Darrisaw come back at some point. So
I agree with every word of that. What happens if, and it's not likely to happen, but what happens if the Houston Texans somehow win the AFC South?
Yeah, Ryan's has got a credible case too. He's one of the six. I would put Ryan's, I would put McDaniel in there, although McDaniel has gone from like number one to number six because he keeps losing these high profile games. You know, there's really just, it's not as wide open, I think, as the market is currently making it. And I do think that there is a pretty clear misprice, at least on Kevin O'Connell, because, you know, again, like in the same sense that, you know, you want to have a bet on a player that has the opportunity to, or player, coach, whatever, that can literally control their own destiny. And Kevin O'Connell beating Dan Campbell and literally flipping that award is where you want to be. And which basically says any kind of, you know, highly liquid market that says, gives you an idea of what the true probability of the Vikings winning the NFC North is, I think that should be his coach of the year price.
Just after spending a segment saying we're too close to the sun on some of these awards, we get even closer to the sun on NFL Coach of the Year. I think it's a great discussion, and I think you make a very good case for the path, anyway, that it would take for Kevin O'Connell to get there. Do you have a number on Kevin O'Connell?
I bet it at 21 yesterday after we had this conversation.
Yeah, interesting. More with Drew on the other side. His NBA thoughts, picks, and his Week 10 NFL bets next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hi. We got to talk about Zyn nicotine pouches. We're always debating what a team needs to do to get to number one, but Zyn nicotine pouches are already there. It's helped millions of people achieve lasting change, earning the title of America's number one nicotine pouch. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada at the D. Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Whale_Capper on Twitter for Drew, and of course, Deep Dive Podcast and NBC Sports Bet the Edge. All right, Drew, we got a lot to get to here in this segment. One, when I was doing Breeders' Cup research last week, which Kelly was just amazed that I was so on top of the Breeders' Cup, by the way. I've never been so disrespected in my life. But I came across you, not with your slash hat, but with a more horse racing hat, giving out horse racing picks. I assume you were doing it for NBC Sports. Didn't your favorite horse get scratched right before the race? Yes. Is that what went down?
Yes, it was very, very, I was pretty mad because I was the perfect progression in the distaff, like exactly the same as the run up that this was, the three horse, pretty mischievous, perfect run up to the Kentucky Oaks where she popped and it was like, this is going to happen. And, for some reason they just felt like she wasn't up to it and they scratched her. So didn't get to see that horse, but I do have a good story. The Breeders' Cup was phenomenal, by the way. It was just a really well done event. If you haven't already read about the Cody's Wish story, and that will challenge your conceptions of like, you know, there being a higher being, I will tell you, I'm an atheist, but I was like, whoa, what the heck? This is wild. You know, just give that a read if you find that. But the best story was, we were out for a run with my wife. I took her to the Breeders' Cup out for a run that morning of, and we stopped for, a drink at the water fountain. Seagull just drops a poop right on her shoulder. And I was like, okay, Breeders' Cup Classic, what number are you seeing right now? She says 3. And what do you know?
Stop.
Tell everybody at the track this story. I was like, the 3 is winning the Classic. The 3 is winning the Classic. I made no other win bets the entire time we were there except betting the 3 to win. He was spectacular. White Barrio, just a magical run. Just goes to show you the old school tricks and auspices. They still have a little bit of power.
As valid as a deep dive into baseball analytics. There it is.
That's the sharpest horse handicapping I've ever heard.
Absolutely.
It works for me. I don't know.
Well, there's our Breeders' Cup segment. That's outstanding.
That's not a made-up story, by the way. Yeah. Absolutely, 100% true.
I always used to wonder, Drew, that because living in Florida, the seagull stuff would happen, and people would be like, oh, it's good luck.
My dad always said, good luck.
I'm like, why is this good luck? I got this crap all over my shirt now. And then people would always push
back.
And
it's disgusting.
And then I'm like, what about your car? When your car's covered in it, I'm supposed to say my car's good luck right now?
It's not good luck when it hits your car.
I got bird pooped on me while I was basically sweating the Raptors against the Milwaukee Bucks a million years ago. Like, they were down, impossible. Like, it looked like it was dead. I had massive Raptors futures to win the Eastern Conference in the finals that year. And that was big time. You know, wasn't life changing money, but that was big time money. And I wore that shirt the rest of those Eastern Conference finals.
Pro tip of the hour: go out there and get a bird to poop on you, boys and girls.
Drew's just running around outside watching the game on his phone. He's like, "Where's the bird?
Come on, what's going? Come on."
All right, Iga Świątek returns to being the number one women's tennis player in the world. She wins the WTA Finals in a wind and rain-soaked tournament in Cancun, which was just ridiculous. Yeah. But Iga does it by giving up just 20 total games. I don't know if you caught what I said last week, that I had Iga in futures in this. She was fantastic. And I guess when she won Beijing, I said here on the air, I was like, that was her message to the rest of the tour. Hope you enjoyed it while it lasted. I'm back. Do you agree with that? Are we about to see a run of domination?
Well, that was as impressive an event. That was an impressive domination as I can remember at a World Finals. She was absolutely lights out. There were aspects of her game that I haven't seen before, which is cool. Anytime you're at her stage of her career development, and you're adding weapons, that makes you that much less, it's that much more difficult to understand her tendencies now, and that much more difficult to really, find ways into her game. Like, there still are some questions that I have on the faster hard courts about how she's going to be able to get around a somewhat weaker second serve, but that's about the only chink in the armor right now, which is pretty amazing. I'm not going to overreact and fire missiles on Australia just yet, or on Calendar Slam just yet. I think there are still another, the rest of the women behind her, while they were, they were pretty helpless this week, I think they still are very talented. Kind of interested to see what a full off season does for Rybakina. If she finishes world number 2 next year, I'm not going to be shocked.
Yeah.
Similarly, Sabalenka still is a danger. She's a tough out every time. Pegula took a major step forward, although she's starting to have an Iga problem a la Coco Gauff. So, Iga's got the kind of the mental edge over all of these other women, clearly. And if she can avoid, kind of weird outlier performances, upsets in the middle rounds, then, she's going to be a factor in all 4 slams next year.
Yeah. I have fired away on all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can't, by the way, and if they offer that, will she win 3 slams thing, I may take a crack at that. We'll see. But yes, you've named the 4 that are right up there in the top 5 with her. Okay. NBA, no NBA today because it's election day, and the NBA makes a point. Last year, remember, they did the 15-minute staggered time thing the day before. They want everybody to go out and vote. Obviously, this is not a midterm election or a presidential election. Nonetheless, it's election day, and they've taken the day off. Yesterday, Harden debuted for the Clippers. 6 of 9 for 17, 6 assists, but the rest of the Clippers weren't so good. They lost the Knicks 111-97. AD tweaks his hip. Lakers lose to the Heat 108-107 in a game where, like, nobody scored almost the last 3 minutes of it. And Embiid, 48-11-6 in 31 minutes, and the Sixers 146-128 win. Spurs got housed by the Pacers. They gave up 152. Any NBA note that you want to make here at all at this point of the season with no games today?
Yeah, I think we got to acknowledge the Timberwolves are good. And this is coming from someone who, like, literally got burned so badly preseason by the Timberwolves last year. I was like, never again. Two really, really, really impressive wins so far this season. They've had the toughest strength of schedule so far. Their wins over, you know, snapping the winning streaks of the Celtics and the Nuggets is non-trivial. The Celtics and the Nuggets are absolutely as good as advertised. Those teams are, you know, they are amazing. They should be clearly the conference favorites right now. But the number two, at least in terms of quality of play so far, you got to put Timberwolves number two in the West. And I think you got to put Philadelphia number two in the East. And those are kind of surprising because they're doing it in different ways. Timberwolves right now with maybe like the most impossibly good defensive rating you can imagine. They're almost 5 points clear of the field in terms of best defense so far, which, oh, by the way, if you're following defensive player of the year market, I can't imagine that. With the way that the Grizzlies are playing, with the way the Cavs are playing defense, with the way that the Lakers defensive rating looks so far, with the way that the Bucks defense looks so far, the Heat defense so far, like these guys might be all drawing dead because if you're not a top five defensive rating team, then defensive player of the year is pretty much out of your reach, which brings us back to the hated Rudy Gobert. He's 10-1 in that market. Oh. And I think that's if this is real, if this holds on, and you know they have potential to maybe move on from, you know, Karl Anthony Towns if they can find a trade partner, I think that actually makes this team a little bit better. You know, clearing up some offensive opportunity for and usage for Ant, and kind of making sure that you know, Gobert is clearly the focal point of the defense, I think is probably good for these guys long term. So keeping an eye and an ear out for that type of stuff. But credit to the Timberwolves, they are legit. You know, I would say that anytime they're up against, you know, an elite team and they're going to bring their best, you got to look for them as a dog.
You have three NFL picks for week 10, just three, you said. They are what?
Yeah, so I laid it with the Ravens. I think the tape on Deshaun Watson was really, really suspect. He still looks very, very much on the recovery if he ever even gets back to what we remember of him. He had, I think, maybe two deep balls to Amari Cooper that you thought, okay, well, good job. But, you know, you throw that against a better defense with some better coverage, I don't even know if those are completed passes or if they're picked. And everything else he was doing was sort of classic worst of Deshaun Watson, holding onto the ball for just an eternity, scrambling around, and then most of his targets just short stuff. It felt like every third and five plus was the Browns offense was drawing dead. So I think they're in deep trouble against the Ravens, who I think match up well both sides of the ball there. So laid it with the Ravens at six, and then laid it with the Seahawks at six as well. I think this is kind of an ideal bounce back matchup against the Commanders, in that you have a defense that can't execute man coverage to the way that the last two. Hey, Seahawks are coming off against games against the Browns and the Ravens. Those are the two best defenses in football. No surprise that their offense has not looked good. Now that they get a much, much softer test against the Commies, I think they're going to be able to put some scoreboard pressure on Washington. And I think their defense can definitely come up with some creative blitzes, get after Sam Howell. Sacks, turnovers, I think, are part of this equation here. So laid the points with the Seahawks. And I was part of the under campaign for the Bengals and the Texans. Under 47.5 was my play. It's at 46.5. I think that still goes down. Ja'Marr Chase definitely questionable in my mind to be available to play, and I think you can sell a little bit of a local high on CJ Stroud as he goes from home Stroud to road Stroud.
The under campaign on the Bengals and the Texans. I like that loaded word. Thank you, Drew. We got it in. Appreciate it.
Hey, best luck, yes.
My man. Kai McKeon on College Hoops for Three Man Weave next.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Gil Alexander, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Michael Burns, Gil, I'm tired of the Billy Walters commercial. Why doesn't VSiN promote a pod I never hear about like Long Shots? Just saying. Yeah, well, it'll get
enough commercial. Really, we get tweets on about our commercial breaks every day.
Every segment of every break. You should have a billion downloads an episode. Just shy of that.
Wes Reynolds and I recording later today.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Rich Copro. I had the under at 0.5 for existential today, Gil. Lost it in the first segment. Yes, you did. Angriest guy in Kentucky. Hey, oh, this is tweet-on-tweet violence. Listener-on-listener violence. He's there. Tell Mr. Miyagi it's a ruptured Achilles tendon. Aaron Rodgers is not coming back for the Super Bowl. I'm very sorry, he says. Jason H. 11. Jason H. 11. Thanks a lot, Drew. Now I get to spend next summer at Saratoga trying to get a bird to take a dump on me. Appreciate it. It's an excellent pro tip.
I really did. I was really wondering how the – did you catch the bit of the story about him watching the NBA game and he got pooped on? How does that work?
Oh, that's a good
point. You're somehow watching the game outside.
I sort of let that go. Maybe he was one of those, like, playoff situations where everybody's in a park watching their team.
Yeah, I don't know.
I love that when it happened to his wife. Like, his wife was probably freaking out. He's like, wait, what number are you thinking about?
What team? What animal comes to mind?
Colin Murphy was driving down to Mohegan Sun last spring with July, top off my Jeep. No exaggeration, I got bird pooped on 5 times in a 1.5 hour drive. Oh, my God.
Yeah, see, like, that doesn't feel lucky to me. That sounds like a horrible scenario.
Well, it was. He says, needless to say, my buddies and I all hit the exacto on the Derby that night. The poop is real. I'm just saying, man.
I need to turn things around, I guess.
And then Robert Busa with a random question. Gil, can you ask Drew, does he have the green thumb or does the better half have the green thumb in the family? This is from Jesse Welch. Logan bleeping Webb, guys, what are we even doing here? Well, he is worthy. He's just not quite as worthy from our betting perspective as the other guys, but this is the point of that whole segment, right? That we don't, for those who missed it, again, no Spencer Strider, no Justin Steele, and even the finalists for NL Cy Young, when we spent an exorbitant amount of time talking about both of those guys. And instead, it is Zach Gallen, along with Blake Snell and Logan Webb of the San Francisco Giants, who, again, had the best walk rate in baseball, had the best ground ball rate, had the most innings pitched. I mean, he was good. Chris of St. Bart's, what number did you find Iga to win the Australian? Assume you played already. I did. 3-1 was the best I could find at this juncture. Let's talk some college basketball. Last night, just a windfall. I mean, grand wave. What am I thinking about? A wave.
An onslaught of games.
A massive wave of college basketball games. Kelly is thinking my thoughts for me. Let's talk some college hoops with Kai McKeon from Three Man Weave joining us. How you doing, Kai?
I'm doing good, Gil. Thanks for having me.
Kai, your hair looks great as always. Let's just point that out first. It's the elephant in the room. Everybody notices. We get it.
Appreciate it.
How many bets did you end up with yesterday total?
Yeah, I probably had around 25 or so.
You do okay?
Yesterday, so I did okay. Not as good as I wanted to, but it wasn't a disaster. 113 games is it's quite the slate, especially when you consider today's got like 15, tomorrow's got 12. I don't know why they do it. I don't know why they stack it up so heavily on day one.
Not only did they stack it up, it was all like most of it was in this condensed time range too.
Yeah.
So if you're betting pre-vol, even if you're, if you're betting in game, my God, it's so hard to keep up with. Let me just talk about one game first, get your thoughts on, because probably the headline was Michigan State yesterday. Michigan State, number 4 team in the country preseason. Tom Izzo was 73-0 home games in November. They lose to James Madison in overtime. Something to be concerned about, or just one game that we'll quickly forget about?
I think I lean towards one game. Michigan State was 1-for-20 from three. And yeah. I think that's an outlier for any team, you know, frankly, obviously. But certainly some concerns. I mean, I think everyone assumed Michigan State, all their players would progress on a linear curve and all improve. A.J. Hogard, for instance, doesn't look any better than last season. Tyson Walker is about the only impressive thing I saw from Michigan State yesterday. Not going to overreact. James Madison's a good team, very well coached. But yeah, a huge loss on opening day there.
Okay, was there anything else yesterday where you looked at, and again, it's the smallest of all sample sizes, but was there anything else you were like, okay, something to keep an eye on anyway?
Yeah, there are several results. Georgia didn't look nearly as good as I kind of anticipated. They seemed pretty much in disarray. Some smaller mid-major upsets down the line. I won't bore the audience with some small details. I was on Western Illinois. They lost 6.5 in overtime, so I've got my first bad beat of the year, which was fantastic.
And so it begins. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Princeton. How about Princeton beating Rutgers? That was huge. They continue their trajectory from last season. Impressive. Yeah, just so many games to process. I'm still going through last night.
Okay, what did you? It is a much shorter slate today, as you alluded to. Did you end up with anything today?
I do. Yeah. I'm taking Northern Iowa today. I think it's down to 4 now. They're playing North Texas at North Texas. North Texas lost their coach, Grant McCaslin, to Texas Tech. For my money, one of the best coaches in the country. They replaced him with a good coach in theory, Ross Hodge. He's been an assistant under McCaslin forever, but they also lose their 3 best players from last year, including Tyler Perry, went to Kansas State. And they also don't have Rondell Walker eligible quite yet. He's waiting on a waiver decision from the NCAA. Whereas Northern Iowa returns everyone. So I think the Panthers keep this one close. It might be ugly. It might be low scoring. It's going to be a defensive game, but I like him catching 4.
That's the only one.
I also took a swing on Creighton, big favorites at home. The lopsided matchups kind of crushed yesterday. And I don't like to follow a trend or anything like that, but I think there is something to these power teams wanting a statement coming out of the gate. And also Creighton just has the ability, the firepower to blow a team out like Florida A&M. So that line's around 33, 34. I took it for a small.
I love with college basketball, you see like schools that you forget about, like the Bethesdas of the world, Brescia University in action tonight. I'm sure you're familiar with them in Kentucky. Yeah. all right, here's what I really want to know in our final few minutes here. Where did you and your buddies at Three Man Weave, who we love so much, you know, Jim Roop specifically is, I think I remember, he's always the guy who comes, you know, when we get to March Madness, he's like, oh yeah, I got these teams, you know, at 80-1 in, you know, the middle of the summer or whenever he bet them. What do you have in your futures portfolio right now? What are the teams that you have to win it all?
Yeah, so I took a huge swing with Cal at the beginning of the summer. I assumed Jalen Tyson was going to be eligible, and it was a crazy number. That one's not going to look very good, but I did take a little St. John's when Patino got hired. I think it was 100-1. It was a pretty good number at the time. Florida Atlantic is in my portfolio. Duke is in my portfolio as well. And I'm thinking pretty hard about adding Purdue. I think they're the best team in the country, and I still kind of think their odds, there's some value there.
Zach Edey in his 75th year at Purdue. I got
exactly.
Oh, you were Jonathan?
And specifically, Kai, what kind of bet did you make on Florida Atlantic for those of us that might be interested in tailing? Just to win it all?
Just to win it all. I got them around 60-1 back in the summer, 66-1 in some places, I think. That was just a value bet personally. I don't really expect them to get there, but I think they have the talent to do it, and where they're priced in the market at the time, I thought it was a pretty good bet.
Hoot hoot, let's go.
I have one bet that I made months ago, which is Alabama at 60-1. I noticed you didn't mention Alabama. And it was strictly a bet where I look at KenPom, right? We look at KenPom, then you look at the market. This could apply to Baylor was the other team that this sort of applied to. Whereas the biggest difference between their market odds and how KenPom had them. By the way, is that something you look at? And why not Alabama for a bet for you?
I don't think it's a bad way to do it at all. Yeah, I think KenPom, he's not biased like humans are, right, when he's analyzing teams.
Well, he's not a human.
Well, Bama, yeah. Exactly. Bama looked amazing game one. Their firepower is real. Grant Nelson looks every bit of an SEC player. So I don't hate that bet. 60-1, that's a fantastic price, in my opinion.
Yeah. Baylor doesn't interest you either?
A little less. I'm still concerned about the defense from Baylor that we saw the cracks last year. And I don't know if Jerome Tang was really the secret architect behind their success. I love Scott Drew, but I think Tang was a big loss last season to Kansas State.
All right, Kai McKeon, Jim Root, Matty Cox, the three of you still together? Y'all still a band? Yes.
Still together.
Still
three
together.
Man weave strong. Yes.
Three man weave strong at 3MW underscore CBB is your, where all your picks every day at 3MW underscore CBB.
Yes, sir. We are figuring out our show schedule right now, but
yes,
everything you can find us at will be on that Twitter handle.
See, Kai, I knew not to ask about the show schedule because a little birdie told me that you guys were working on that still. That's right. A lot of bird references on the show today, by the way. Just want to point that out. Thank you. Great to see you, man.
Good to see you guys, too. Hoot hoot.
Kai McKinn at Kai underscore 3MW if you're looking for his Twitter individually as well. For those on the DK Network, Dan Le Batard is next. We're coming back. Talk college football with Pete Vutak and more next.